can shake me. She has said she won't forsake me. I'm in her hand. She sets a table before me.
Friends, will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable unto you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. It wasn't until a few weeks after her death that we discovered her treasure chest. She had lived in that farmhouse for more than 40 years. My father and my aunt helped her to build that house. And yet, neither of them knew that treasure box existed either. But down in the basement, built right into the wall of the canning cellar, on the second row from the floor, behind some green beans and pickles, not something tempting like peaches or preserves, was a dull metal door that secretly hid my grandparents' earthly treasures. In that small box built into the wall were some things that you would expect: titles, deeds, certificates of deposit. But there was something else in that box that blew my mind. It was a small, relatively simple, but absolutely stunning piece of jewelry. My grandmother is one of the most profound influences in my entire life. I spent so much time with her, and I cannot remember one single moment. Not at a wedding, not at a funeral. I can't remember a single moment where she wore any jewelry except for her wedding band. And here in this treasure box was something objectively gorgeous. I can only imagine how it would have changed that already beautiful smile, simple, earth-worn face of a farmer that she had. I don't know why that piece of jewelry never made it out of that box. Maybe she was afraid of taking that treasure out of the box because she might break it. Maybe she was worried how others might look at her for wearing something so fancy. Maybe instead, and this is what I tend to believe and what my dad tends to believe, is that this piece of jewelry was her mother's and her mother's before that. And so it was something that had been passed down for generation to generation to generation. And all she knew was that it was her job to keep and protect that piece of jewelry for the generation that would follow. I don't firmly know the answer to the question as to why something so beautiful never came out to make the rest of our lives more beautiful. But sadly, I have thought that the value of that treasure, it's only increased when a treasure is used, when it's shared, when it's put out there for everyone to see or to hear, that it might evoke something new, that we might see everything in a new way. My grandmother safeguarded that treasure. Yet in doing so, she kept it from being the fullest treasure it could be. It got me thinking about what treasures I sometimes hold so fast to, so close to my heart, guard so carefully that I don't let them out to do their work either. The 23rd Psalm is an absolute treasure of the church, our faith, and even the whole world. When I do a funeral, and when we are gathered out at the graveside, and when we recite the 23rd Psalm, whether the people there are lifelong members of the church or maybe have never even gone, it is amazing how many people know the words to this treasure. The New Oxford Annotated Study Bible. It's not exactly a book given over to subjective reflections. Instead, it dives deep into objective truth, or so they claim. But I was stunned that when you read in the footnotes at the bottom of the 23rd Psalm, it starts simply this way: the most beloved of all psalms. So uncharacteristic for that heady intellectual book to make that claim of what that psalm means and does, what a treasure it is. It is a treasure in the larger corpus of the Psalms, a book Walter Brueggemann calls our treasure box. And he says this about the 23rd Psalm: don't you dare leave it in that box even to protect it. For the 23rd Psalm is not meant to be protected, but rather to offer us protection. It is not meant for you and I to go home on a day like this and light a fire and in the coziness of our living room, secretly take it out and enjoy its warmth. Instead, Brueggemann claims, it is meant for people who are walking through fire, and especially in that valley of the shadow of death that we all know so poetically true. The Psalms, you see, are a treasure because they are truth. They are a treasure because they have been passed down from our mothers and the mothers before that and the mothers before that and the mothers before that and the mothers before that. And we were told by them to let the Psalms be on our lips, to let them be out in the world, never to keep them hidden away. They were written by those whose lives were somehow transformed by the Holy and shared that they might transform you and me. We take this 23rd Psalm out a lot. I'm amazed that we read it at weddings and funerals too. We rely on it for baptisms and ordinations. We know it by heart, and every time we hear it, our hearts warm, don't they? I sat there watching your faces as the choir sung it this morning, and I watched as those emotions came across the familiarity of it all. I wonder, though, because it is so precious and sacred, I wonder if we sometimes think of it as sacred rather than reminding us that it points us to the sacred. I wonder if we sometimes limit it, whether by only being able to hear it in any one translation, like, for instance, the King James Version. There are those who would claim that King James wrote it that way, and therefore we ought to read it that way, and the King James Version is amazingly poetic. I wonder sometimes if those words just wash over us because we've heard it so many times and heard more sermons about it than we can count and add this one to it. You see, I think if I had seen my grandmother wear that jewelry, I would have seen the jewelry differently, and I would have seen her differently too. But maybe that's because it would have been such a rarity, it would have stood out to me, unlike what happens when we evoke these wonderful words. Bobby McFerrin, as an artist, believes he has a sacred responsibility. And that responsibility is one of interpretation. A sacred responsibility that contains both the possibility for redemption and the reality of transformation. His job, he muses, is to bring words to life, that they might bring new life to people. And that's what we do when we read something like the 23rd Psalm. Living words, not confined, but alive, alive and transforming, transforming for the good. You see, McFerrin knows this, that interpretation done well means that those who come to his concerts angry can leave forgiving. That those who come to his concerts bitter might leave wrapped in mercy. You see, these living words, they meet us in the midst of our lives and they change the very course of our lives. McFerrin shared in a recent interview that he reads the Bible a lot. He reads it multiple times every day. And he does so, he says, because he knows he can read the same passage in the Bible 1,000 times and see the same meaning peeking through, and then the 1,001st time that he picks it up, he sees something in that passage that he never noticed before. How many times have you read or heard the 23rd Psalm? I wonder if this version sung by our choir could be that 1,001st time that reveals something new to you. I hope so. But truth be told, this psalm is not only the most beloved psalm, it likely has more interpretations than any other. The prophet Ezekiel, in fact, in chapter 34, takes this idea of a shepherd who leads. You know, the shepherd who feeds, the one who sets that table for us in the midst of our enemies. But he adds something to that description. You see those enemies in Psalm 23? Ezekiel says God's going to feed them too, but God's going to feed them with justice. Words brought to life give new life to us. Jesus, in fact, would take this very mantle of shepherd on himself, right? We talked about that with the kids, giving us not just an abstract view of what a shepherd does, but describes this table right here and its literal presence every time we gather around it in the presence of loved ones. Jesus also then decides to show us just how far the shepherd will go for the sake of the sheep, living words, new life. And even the King James Version, one so many of us love when we read this text, it too is an interpretation. That phrase, the cup runneth over, it's a beautiful poetic interpretation. It gets me in the heart every time I hear it. But the literal Hebrew doesn't so much talk about a cup running over. Instead, it talks about a cup that is fully satisfying, deeply enriching. And yet those words interpreted bring to life how much life that cup and this table gives. You need to know this interpretation by McFerrin, like all of the others, are brought to life in a specific context, or should we say a convergence of contexts. And I bet one of the first things that jumped out at you in this text, one that he dedicated to his mother, is the feminine language used to describe God. I know sometimes in the world, that feminine language can be jarring to people. It can cause us to pause and think. It can even be a roadblock, though it should never be, because God is both mother and father. And just in case you think that McFerrin grew up in some sort of world that was just completely open, his father was a Southern Baptist, and they went to a very high Episcopalian church throughout his life. And you see, on the night this version of the 23rd Psalm was written, he had been rehearsing with one of his singing groups in a church. He shared with Krista Tippett in an On Being interview that that setting, that beautiful Anglican setting, got the people in the choir, most of whom weren't churched, to start talking about, as McFerrin describes it, the heavy patriarchal element of, you know, religion and all that stuff. He was in a practice at the time that each morning he would get up and write a new piece of music. And the next morning, it is this psalm that came out. But it wasn't just that conversation. McFerrin shared in a different interview that the morning he wrote it, he had been thinking about his mother, the one who sang in a church choir very much like this one. He was reading a passage that morning about the unconditional love of God, and he went out from reading to watch his wife interacting with their very young child. And he said that all of those things came together, his mother's love, watching his wife's love for their child, and realizing that one of the glimpses of unconditional love God shows us comes through our mothers. They cherish our spirit, he said. They demand we become our best selves, he said. They take care of us. He wrote it in the feminine because he thinks God's love encompasses the best of both masculine and feminine love, not an either or, but a both and. A beautiful treasure for our living too. In some ways, in 1990, it was a bit of a radical thing that he did, and yet it's a completely normal thing that McFerrin did, taking this treasure and bringing it to life. I recently played this version of the song for Father Sam down at St. Paul's Church. He had never heard it before, but he immediately remarked, "Oh my goodness, McFerrin is, that's Anglican chant I hear." This new version coming out of a most traditional way. And then you notice that this thing ends with a doxology, that praise to God given at the end. Turns out at the end of morning prayer in an Anglican setting, the psalm would be followed by that very doxology. Old things bringing new life. There is one line in this psalm that has stuck with me over the last week of looking at it. I don't know which one resonated with you. But I love how McFerrin takes the words of that first stanza, the one talking about restoration of soul, the one talking about walking in the right path of righteousness for God's sake, and turns it into this. She restores my soul. She rights my wrongs. She leads me in a path of good things and fills my heart with song. Perhaps only a musician could do that. But it is such a deep and positive and powerful affirmation of what God does in our lives if we just let her. I wonder what would have happened if we had discovered that treasure box in my grandparents' basement. I wonder how it would have changed how we looked at them. But I absolutely wish that we had found it, that I could have taken that jewelry and put it on my grandmother and saw how it changed her and me and that piece of jewelry. I am deeply grateful that Bobby McFerrin took this jewel out of the Psalms treasure box, interpreted it, and put those words to life, because now I will never hear those words the same again. Here's the thing. McFerrin knows that music, like Psalms, they have the power to rearrange who we are, to stir us up and to heal. He shares that of all of his concerts that he has ever done, the most profound movement that ever happened for him was when, in the midst of a concert, while it was still going on, between songs, a woman sitting in the audience on hearing this particular music stood up, and in the middle of that concert, with tears in her eyes, she simply said, "I feel so good now. Thank you." Friends, that is why we open up passages like this one, not just to cling to ancient treasures, but to find our lives rearranged and to feel good. That our life might forever change, that our anger might turn into forgiveness, that our bitterness might be bathed in mercy, and that we too might feel so good once again. Friends, may this treasure stay with you on this day and every day. Amen.